I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
What's up, guys? It's Joe LaPuma. This is the Complex Sneakers Podcast. We are inside, but we're here. We're here. My guy in Jersey, Matt Welty. How you doing, brother?
Doing all right. How are you?
Hanging in there. And of course, live from Brooklyn, Brendan Dunn. How's it going, buddy?
I'm stuck at home practicing the Tootsie Slide, looking like a young Bob Fosse. I'm making the most of it.
Listen, for the audience, we've had a little bit of technical difficulties. It's been a rocky start, but we're here.
Joe, what's your internet situation like?
My internet situation is fine. They tried to get me to upgrade. Listen, the internet's fine. I don't know about the program we're using. No names.
Okay.
We're not going to use names. The internet.
We do have to upgrade, though. That's what you're saying?
We may have to upgrade, okay? Because listen, the internet's fine. It's got me through around 30 million views a month. So I think the internet's fine, okay?
Welty, how are you feeling?
Feeling a little bit better. I tried to get my internet upgraded and I had to go through like 15 layers of like complex, like higher ups.
They hit you with the red tape, the bureaucracy?
They sent me like a hotspot to like boost my thing. And
you going war driving?
What's that?
We're going to go war driving one day.
What is that?
That's for all my hackers listening.
Did you get the internet upgraded?
No, they still have to run through like layers of higher ups at Complex.
We're still recording remotely. We still have the faint beep in the background of someone's smoke alarm in their building. We're not going to name names.
That wasn't a smoke alarm, was it?
There's like smoke alarms that have low batteries in my hallway. Oh. And I contacted my superintendent about it and was like, hey, I'm recording a show upstairs, like being that I work from home. Can you please, you know, change the batteries in the thing because, you know, it gets picked up? And he's like, oh, I ordered it. I ordered the parts.
You got to go in their office space style with like a sledgehammer and just take care of it, you know?
Yeah, because I thought you were just burning the elk. You know, I thought the elk in the oven was a medium well, okay? I thought that's...
I think you're the one burning food, so I...
Right now, I have a flank steak defrosting. We'll see. I'll update you guys next week if I nailed it because the first attempt was horrible.
Listen, I want to say I did get in the kitchen last night. It was a big moment for me. I cooked dinner for myself for the first time in God knows how long. I made a nice little burrito.
Nice.
Went grocery shopping, so...
Real meat or tofu?
No meat, just, you know, bean and cheese and some tomato in there as well.
All right. That sounds pretty boring, but also pretty good.
It's a step in the right direction, I think.
How are we feeling about this week? You guys shot an episode of FSR. This is going to be out with a legend. You could say who it is.
Clive Frazier on the show. Man, it was a good time. It's always tough to recreate the energy of the studio at home, but I feel like Clyde really brought it. Trinidad really brought it. I think we all had a lot of fun and he's got so much sneaker history, so many stories to tell that. Yeah, we really enjoyed that one.
Awesome. And sneaker shopping, we had the finale go up this week, Lil Wayne.
Young Moolah.
Yeah, baby. Really happy how that performed.
Hold on.
Yes.
You heard
exactly, I heard it. That was my favorite part of the intro, the lighter flick.
Did you just light a Lalabo candle, Brendan, or something?
I have an exquisite array of candles on the mantelpiece.
Diptyque in the crib?
There's a few diptyque pieces. Yeah, you know, there's plenty.
But yeah, it's been, you know, guys hanging in there. Welty, you're almost at full strength. I know you were feeling under the weather, but what are you percentage-wise? What do we give you right now?
I would say I'm a passing grade.
Okay. That's why we're out of the office, okay?
Listen, we're all going to get a much-needed jolt of energy end of this week. I mean, listen, Drake's about to drop the Tootsie Slide, right?
Yes.
You heard the snippet?
No, and I really don't.
Nah, it's fire.
I don't know.
Welty.
Don, you know you're going to be practicing in the mirror.
I'm already practicing the dance. Welty said he was like, what is 60%? I'm like 60% on this Tootsie Slide thing.
I'm more than 60. I'd say I'm about like 75. At actual passing grade. I don't know. I feel like those are some of the songs that everyone gets hyped for. And then like 2 years later, you listen to it and you're like, that one wasn't the best.
Nah, man. Welty, when I invite you to my wedding 10 years down the line, we're going to hit that 2-3 slide. And we're going to remember these fond times. By the way, we complain a lot about like working from home. Obviously, we're happy to actually be working. And, you know, shout out to everybody who lost their job in this whole coronavirus thing, who, you know, whole service industry kind of wiped out in New York here. Our thoughts go out to those people. That's rough. But we're happy to still be doing our thing and kind of giving people something to digest during these tough times.
Absolutely. And we hope everyone's staying safe and staying inside. You know, we're going to get through this and we'll remember this and hopefully appreciate the little things. Okay, and he did the lighter flick. I appreciate it. You can never have too many lighter flicks. So last week, I thought the episode was really strong and it was a really good talk on Air Max. But one thing that seemed to stand out is the popping of the air bubbles. It seemed like it had some legs online and some people remembered doing it. Some people, it was the first they heard of it. And we kind of thought like, what could we do to kind of tell more stories of the retail days? You know, Welty and I both worked retail. Done. What were you, a barista or?
Oh my God. Oh no, listen. I have worked a lot of retail. This is a little bit of background. Never sneaker related though. Like I grew up in a record store. I did that thing for years. I worked at a Magic the Gathering card shop in college. We can get into that a little bit in this space, but mostly I want to hear your guys' stories.
When Napster launched, were you really against it?
Yeah, I was buying every CD, man. And people at high school wanted to like borrow CDs from me to burn them. And I'm like, that's taking money off my, you know, I got to eat. My family's got to eat. So I try not to do too much pirating of music as a result.
You really worked at a Magic the Gathering card shop?
So
you have like a silk button-up shirt with like a fucking red dragon across the chest?
Oh, wow.
I'll promise you I'll tell some stories. But more than that, I want to ask you guys about your sneaker retail history. I'm going to just listen on this one because this stuff is so interesting to me when you guys are telling that Air Max bubble popping story that's so foreign to me. And I kind of didn't realize how crazy stuff gets in there. So like, where did you guys start when it comes to sneaker retail?
For me, it started 1999. I was a sophomore in high school. I was 16. So it was about to be my first job. It was the first time that I could legally work. And a bunch of us on the track team, the mall was kind of close to the high school at that point. And us at the track team were all looking for jobs at the time. And they were like a little older than me. So I was mostly friends with seniors and I was a sophomore. And a store was opening up. And literally there was a guy outside of the store with a piece of paper. It was no like electronic resume, nothing like that. And they were like, hey, this store is opening up. Put your date of birth and put your first and last name and a contact number. And, you know, we're looking for applicants and we're looking for people to work as the store is being opened. And that store turned out to be Finish Line in Bayshore. And everyone got hired, essentially. Like, everyone got hired. It was probably 10 of us.
Were you ecstatic? Did you think you would have a chance?
I didn't know. We were hoping, like, but it was at a time when we were all doing everything together. So, like, we're just like, oh, let's all apply to the store. And we were all running track. So we were kind of into sneakers. And I was into sneakers heavily at the time. Basically, we put our names down. We all got hired. And the first like couple weeks was literally setting up the store in terms of like putting the shelves in the stock room and ordering them. And the store didn't open for weeks. But it was like few weeks from start to finish putting shelves up and displays and the shoe wall. And then my first shoe, my first day of work was the Air Zoom Citizen. And then, you know, it was a long road of 10 years or so on and off.
Grueling work. Welty, where does it start for you? You were a little bit older when you joined the sneaker retail world, right?
A little bit, yeah. I guess I don't want to say that I was like born into it, right? But my mom, shout out, Cindy Welty.
I wasn't sure if you were going to say her name. I don't think I'm ever going to say my mom's name on this podcast.
That's fine. She's probably listening to it. But so we used to live in New Hampshire for a while growing up. And we lived in the town where like Timberland was, the boot company, where like their like global headquarters was. And she got like a job like answering the phones at Timberland. So she worked there for like 15 years, I think. And so that was like, she got me like my first job, like right out of high school. So that was working at a Timberland like factory outlet store. So that was like my first, I know it's not sneakers, but that was like the first footwear retail job that I had. That was like only a few months and left and then did a bunch of other shitty jobs. But then I ended up working at Dick's Sporting Goods, which was like a wild experience, I would say.
Around what time is this?
So this is 2006.
You're in college?
I'm like early like college years, right? Like going to school part-time.
And what's wild about Dick's Sporting Goods?
Because Dick's isn't like a real sneaker store, right? So like they only sold like athletic footwear. Like, they only sold basketball sneakers in the winter. They didn't sell, like, Jordans, like, all year round. But, like...
Wait, what?
They didn't, like, at the time, the store I worked at didn't even sell Jordans. Like, they only sold basketball sneakers to sell to, like, basketball players. They didn't sell basketball sneakers.
And, like, kids in high school, basically. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. They would stock, like, football cleats, like, in the summer to, like, sell to football teams. Basketball sneakers to sell to basketball, like...
Gotcha.
You'd be working there, and there'd be all the other departments, and we were right next to, like, the hunting department, and this is in New Hampshire, mind you, so, like, you'd get people, like, wandering in, like, asking you to help them, like, with a shotgun, and you're like, yo, dude, like, I don't even know how to use any of that stuff, man. It was weird, because, like, the people who you worked with, like, weren't into sneakers, but at the same time, I would say that, like, that's where I learned the most about footwear, because they actually made you take, like, tests on, you know, what's pronation, what's supination, like.
That's great.
Actually learn all, like, you had to take a test to learn all that sort of stuff. So it really, like, opened my eyes, because then I ended up going to Foot Locker, like, a few years later, or, like, a year later. And Foot Locker was just like, yo, just sell them the most expensive shoe. Who gives a fuck? Like, sell them a pair of Nike Shox. That's the best running shoe. And I'm like, Nike Shox fucking suck to run in. Like, why are you trying to sell people these?
Joe, did you have to take any tests when you came into the game?
You know, hostile work environment videos, which, listen, I passed with flying colors. The finish line videos were classic too. It was like the worst acting ever. But Wealthy, to your point that maybe Dix was interested in the education of function and stuff like that, finish line, it was like, yo, sell accessories. Every shoe has to have an insole. You have to demonstrate sneaker cleaners on every shoe. And
were you guys getting crazy perks back then? Like, I always think about what the discount is or how many sneakers you can get early and stuff like that. Were you guys running those sorts of jigs?
We had a discount. It was 30%. And that was like a perk in itself. And as a young employee, like, you could put stuff on hold, and that was always great. But I was putting the money I was making right back into the store. There's a Instagram account that we were talking about called Good Burger, and he's like posting all these old commercials of, like, the Jordan 3% and the Jordan T Runner, which was, like, I think early 2000s, of course. And I remember just getting my finish line check and immediately buying both of them. They came out like the same weekend. So those were like the perks for me. But then towards the end, when I was a manager, I literally have boxes at my parents, like, such a dick. It was like a Jordan 2, the white and red original colorway. And it says, hold for Puma. If you touch it, you're fired. Like, so yeah.
Oh,
so
my,
like,
God.
I mean, I was young though, but, like, towards the end, I was definitely being able to hold sneakers as kind of like my rank in the store went up.
Wealthy, did you have crazy perks?
Dick's was cheap as fuck, man. I just want to put that on the record. They had, like, I think it was a 20% discount, right, that they would give you. But if something was on sale, like, you couldn't apply it to that.
You couldn't stack the code?
No, it was, like, the most you could get was 20% off. Like, if something was on sale, like, you just got it for the sale price, which is whatever. Fuck them. But at Foot Locker, you had, like, 30% off, same thing. And then they had, like, the infamous, like, employee appreciation events that were 50% off. And there was also the military discount that people would run tons of jigs on. You'd type, it was, like, code 69, like, on the register.
Did you ever do that?
Hell yeah. People would definitely, like, because you had to sell the cleaners and stuff, and you'd be like, yo, dude, like, I'll give you this insole for free, but, like, you just don't get a receipt. And, like, people would, like, ring them up on the fucking discount.
Wait. Explain that to me.
So you come into the store, right? And you're like, yo, check out this insole. It's normally $20, like, but I'll give it to you for free. But, like, you're just not going to get, like, a receipt with the thing. Because, like, people would try to come back and return it. And they're like, the manager would be like, why is there a discount on this? And, like, it's like a paper trail behind it.
Oh, no paper trail. And you guys have mentioned this before, all these extra things. You had to just, like, sell shoe cleaner and insoles and force shields and things like that. You're constantly hawking these extra products in addition to sneakers. Is that right?
Yeah, it had to be at Foot Locker, it had to be like 20% of your daily sales or something like that. I think it was either 10 or 20%, something like that. But they'd also do crazy shit, like, on the employee appreciation events, the 50% off, where, like, they would get people to buy, like, 15 pairs of shoes and then also, like, keep a portion of the money. That was, like, a huge thing.
Welty, were you a good salesman?
I knew the shoes and, like, all that sort of stuff, but, like, I hated, like, trying to sell people insoles because I just felt like it was bullshit.
Guys, I say this humbly. You can ask people who worked at Finish Line, like, who still work at Finish Line. Like, there's some people out there, like, my guy Marlon Matut is out there if he's listening, and some of my friends. At a point, I was the youngest number one salesman in the company with accessories and multiples. They used to call them multiples. So every time someone brought up a shoe, it had to be multiple items. I was a beast. And everyone was like competitive. Like we were so, so competitive with that stuff and insole in every single sneaker, scuff and stain, you know, the rain and stain protector. I used to put it on my khakis and then dump water on my khakis and the water would beat off. And I was like, listen, look at if it's working on your khakis, it's going to work on your shoes. And people were buying. So I was always up for like the competitiveness of selling multiples and accessories.
What were the actual sneakers you guys were moving a lot of units of, by the way? Like this is, you said early 2000s, mid 2000s, like which models particularly were you making the bulk of your sales off of?
People think that if you, like a lot of sneakerheads have a warped perception about what actually sells at retail. I think a lot of people think that like it's only like hype shoes and, you know, retro Jordans and retro Air Max and all that sort of stuff. Like that stuff does sell. But like I'm talking like 2006 to like I worked from so I did like sneaker retail from like 2006 to 2012, right? Or 2013. So 7 years.
You got your Purple Heart, too. You got your Medal of Honor.
Yeah. But a lot of the stuff we would sell, like we put a story up on the Complex Sneakers the other day. You should go read it for Air Max Day. Like the Air Max Wright was like the biggest seller in the store. They had this shoe called the Air Prestige, which was like a takedown version of the Air Force. That like there was like $79.99, sell a ton of those, sell a ton of Nike Shocks. I mean, you'd also sell like white on white Air Force Ones and like retro Jordans like with releases. But I would say the majority of stuff that you sold at the stores were actually like bullshit sneakers that sneakerheads would laugh at.
1,000%. And to that point, obviously Air Force Ones, Timberlands, but like a shoe like the Fat Farm Classic Beamer. It was like this white, all white shoe with the P, kind of like a P emblem. And mm-hmm. It was like half Adidas Superstar, half kind of like Air Force One because it was all white. We blew out of those. I remember that section in the stock room being such a mess. There were so many colors of Fat Farm Classic Beamers and they would sell like crazy. But to Welty's point, like a shoe like the Puma Roma, we used to sell a lot of those. So I definitely agree that non-sneakerhead shoes were moving a ton.
I remember like similar to probably where you were at because I was like working in Jersey too for half the time. But like this guy, Ray, that I used to work with, he was a manager and he was from Staten Island. I think I mentioned him on the podcast before, but he was working, I think, at the Finish Line in the Staten Island Mall. And he said when the all white Shock NZs came out.
Yep.
And this must have been like 2005 or something like that. Mm-hmm. They sold 1,000 pairs in a weekend at the mall.
Oh my God. Yep.
It was a lot of Shocks, I was in Long Island. I went from Long Island to Roosevelt Field to Kings Plaza, Brooklyn. So throughout my journey of retail, kind of different shoes in different places that you would not expect to sell were moving. I remember the Chris Webber Dada Spinners we had. We had so many different sneakers that would come in and it was always – I remember shipment days. It was always exciting to open up boxes and see like what was going to come out in a week or two and filling the walls with new stuff. You know what shoes that we used to sell a lot and that I used to wear? The Air Turbulence. Remember the Nike Air Turbulence? Does anyone remember that?
I don't.
That shoe was trash.
These are fire.
Joe's standing by the Air Turbulence.
As a 17 or 18-year-old kid, yeah, like I still like these. I co-sign them.
I don't know about that one.
You guys mentioned selling like a lot of GR product and how that was the big mover in terms of units. But did you have to work crazy release days like when a pair of Jordans came out? I know people weren't lining up as much back then, but did you have to kind of, you know, regulate to some extent?
The thing was, is that so when I first started out like working in New Hampshire, like those stores didn't get the shoes, right? So
the shoes that people would line up for.
Yeah, or we didn't even sell Air Force Ones. Like, we didn't sell Air Force Ones, didn't sell Air Max 90s, didn't sell retro Jordan product. There was, like, at the time, they called it, like, quote-unquote, like, urban allocation or something like that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So you had to, like, work, like, closer to a city to get those shoes. And then as I got promoted through the company, they'd always move you, like, to stores that were, like, more either in a like closer to a city or like an inner city store because those stores would do higher volume because they had the retro releases. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, at that time it wasn't as crazy.
The only product would have been a pair of Jordans, right? Like the only time I've ever lined up at a mall for a pair of sneakers, it was just a pair of you know, retro Jordan 3s or Jordan 5s or something like that.
But also at the time that, like, I was working, so, like, 2008, 2009, there wasn't as much, like, retro product. That was, like, the whole, like, Countdown Pack era, so there was only, like, one Jordan release, you know, a month. They had all the Fusion Jordans, which nobody cared about. And then we were also going through, like, the recession at that time, which, like, really sucked. So people, like, I remember, like, the Flu Game 12s came out and, like, you sold like five pairs on release day. Like, nobody cared about it. The shoes went on sale, like white and red 12s, like, go on sale, like $120. Like, it's kind of weird to look back at it and see that, you know?
Joe, were there crazy Saturdays for you? Like, were weekend releases big?
Absolutely. You know, there was just 2003 alone or so, black and chrome eights, white, black, true red eights. The 18s came out. I remember even like the 11 low and the black varsity red with like the faux snakeskin. And for me, there was definitely Saturday mornings where people were running. Like, first of all, it was in the era when we started opening early for Jordan releases. So the mall would open at 10, and I think at 8 a.m. we would open up.
And this is in Long Island at this point?
Yes.
Okay.
And it would be basically to get the Jordan customers out of the store and then open for business as usual. So 8 a.m. I think we used to open up, and people would literally be running back and forth from Champs to Finish Line to Foot Locker trying to get their size, like sprinting, like not crazy sprinting, like ComplexCon sprinting to get into the building, but like people like running just if their size was out. And there was really no rhyme or reason back then, because it was one of the first times where people were getting up early to get sneakers, and in the mall, they didn't really know how to deal with it, I guess. So the answer was like 8 a.m., open, get as many people and as many pairs sold, which they sold very quickly, and then open up for business. And but yeah, we definitely saw that. And I think, like,
was it hectic? Were there fights?
I didn't see any fights, honestly, because you know what? In my area, it wasn't like 50 people. It was like 25 people, you know, and split up amongst three kind of big box chains in the mall. People would get them, but you really did have to come at 8 a.m. You had to be there at 8 a.m. or you would miss out. But if you were there, it wasn't like what we see today.
I wonder, for either of you guys, were people like coming in before those things and trying to like let you hold a little bit extra money to save a pair of shoes for them and stuff like that? Because that's definitely something I heard about on Nike Talk and I tried to do, but was never successful.
Towards the end, some managers at Finish Line were definitely selling in bulk to mom and pop stores. And it's something that I noticed towards the tail end.
Really?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Like, and I think they were making some money on top of it. So mom and pop stores where like owners have a few, one in Queens, one in Brooklyn, and one in Long Island. They were definitely coming in, like one guy would come in and try to buy bulk. And I think they would add a little bit on the top, which is like, you know, listen, that's the early days of reselling. And so, yeah, that was definitely happening towards the tail end of my retail career. And it kind of laid the foundation of what we see now.
Yeah, I think a lot of stores do that now with StockX. Wealthy, what about you?
For me, it's kind of like, I guess, multifold. So we had like resellers. I want to say the earliest resellers that I remember dealing with like weren't like Jordan resellers. It was Brazilians. So Nike Shox were like the most expensive shoes like in Brazil at the time and like the most like hype sneakers. So there was a really huge like Brazilian community outside of the mall I was working at in Boston. And they'd always come in and like when the Shox went on sale for like $79.99 and they would try to buy like every fucking pair in the store, but they'd want the like the employee discount. And then ship them to Brazil like 30, 35, 40 pairs like at a time. But you'd kind of have to do it on the low.
So you would give them the discount?
I would and try to get them to break you off. But sometimes it wouldn't happen. Awesome. And then you'd feel like an idiot. But but the real crazy shit happening towards the end, like 2011, that's like when right before I feel like Jordan releases got like regulated. This is before like Foot Locker actually had like a raffle sort of system. And every release, it would be more and more fuck shit. Like the stores would try to like open up like earlier and earlier than the other one. So like, and it wasn't fair to the consumer, I don't think, because people would like show up at like 1 o'clock in the morning because they didn't know if the store was going to open at 3 or 4 or 5 or 6, like whatever the time they were going to drop the shoes. And I think people just really got sick of that and kind of like were like, what's going on? And the malls kind of hated dealing with it, because if you don't know, like the mall's not open at 4 o'clock in the morning, so why does the mall have to hire like security to be there at 4 o'clock in the morning for a Jordan release? And I remember people like backdooring literally full size runs of like the white cement threes from 2011. Wow.
I definitely lined up in a mall for that shoe.
Flint 13s around the same time too, right?
Love those.
I remember literally, I'm talking like 30, 40 pairs.
What year was that?
2011, 2012, right,
Brendan? 2011, okay. Sounds right.
Okay.
Yeah. Full size runs of those getting backdoor to store managers, though, in New Brunswick, New Jersey.
The other thing I want to say, when I worked at Roosevelt Field, it was my second stop in Finish Line. And I'm pretty sure that Ronnie used to come in, and Ronnie had an early eye for
Wait a minute. Ronnie Fai used to come into the Finish Line store in Long Island that you worked at?
Yeah, he's from Great Neck. So my friend Rudy, who we'll get to later, Rudy Calderon, he used to sell Ronnie sneakers, and Ronnie had an early eye for cool Vandals and the stuffed tongue Nike Dunks. And I think that Ronnie used to come into Finish Line Roosevelt Field before we knew each other. And, you know, I'm wondering how many classics that he has back then, but he used to buy a lot.
Really?
Yeah, for sure.
Obviously, you and Ronnie Feig are great friends now, but you think you crossed paths back then?
Absolutely. And from what I know, he used to come in a lot. We just didn't know each other. I'm sure I sold him shoes and we didn't know each other. But yeah, I always hear stories of when we worked there, Ronnie used to come in and buy tons of Heat that are now considered cult classics.
I have two really quick, funny celebrity run-ins. The first one, I was working at PBD. Well, both of them actually at the same store. I was working at a PBD Massachusetts North Shore Mall.
What is it? PBD?
And
what is that?
PBD.
That's the name of the store?
That's the town, but it's spelled Peabody.
Okay.
P-E-A-B-O-D-Y, but in Mass, you pronounce it PBD. I'm there, and a guy walks in, and he's fucking 6'8", 450 pounds, and I'm holy shit, scary, right? Mm-hmm. And he walks up to me, and it ended up being Joe, and I know you'll know who this is, it was Prince Albert from the WWE.
Oh, yes. Yes. Bald head.
Yeah. Yep. And he's fucking huge. Yeah. He's a huge guy. And he walks up to me, and he has size 15, generic Nikes on, and they're creased, and they have a stain on them. He's how do I clean these things? And I was you use this? And I hand him the sneaker cleaner, and he's are mm-hmm. you sure this is going to work? And I'm mm-hmm. yeah, it should work. And he's if it doesn't work, I'm going to come back looking for you. And I was because yes. he's towering over me while this is happening. And
so I guess it worked. He never came back and fucked you up?
No, he never came back and fucking threw body slammed me through the glass.
What's the other celebrity spotting?
The other one was Chris Rock.
Oh.
Came in when he was shooting, I believe, Grown Ups 2 with Adam Sandler and all them, because they were shooting it in Massachusetts. And he came in super incognito. He had a hat down over his eyes and a tracksuit and a pair of, I want to say, Safety Orange 95s on. And he came in it was earlier in the day with mall walkers and stuff or something like that. And I saw him, and I'm never the type to want to be hey, oh my God, Chris Rock, let's take mm-hmm. a photo together. So I'm this dude's definitely incognito. He wants his space. So I was just hey man, do you need help with anything? And he just looks at me, he's nah man, I'm cool. And I'm all right, cool. I'll just let him do his thing. And then he left. And then as he's walking, a group of kids were oh my God, that's Chris Rock. And you just heard a stampede go through the mall, and you could tell he just ran out the door and left.
And you think the 95s were, they carried him there?
Yeah, because he's a dope runner, man.
I got to tell a celebrity story, because I said, I never worked sneaker retail, but I grew up in a record shop / video games shop / instrument shop, just a crazy store. We would have a lot of new and used items and stereo equipment, all sorts of different stuff. And I was in there all the time after school growing up. I was in there one summer, and I think I was in college at the time. I think this is probably 2010, and I'm kind of working, and it sounds a different environment than the one you guys worked in, because it was a family store. My stepdad, rest in peace, owned it. So we kind of got to do whatever we wanted. And, we kind of had a certain attitude towards some customers, or you weren't always paying attention to people and just, kind of let them do their thing. So there's this older guy in there, and he's checking out some bongos, and, he's kind of tapping on him. And it's this guy probably has some money. This guy might start spending some money. So he's messing around with the bongos. And he's yeah, I think I'm going to get these. And then my stepdad's really paying attention. He's oh, this guy's going to spend some money. So let's make sure he gets what he wants. So the guy got the bongos. And again, I'm halfway paying attention, kind of helping him out. Not really. I think I was watching Jeopardy on the TV or something. I think he picked up a keyboard too. He's I'm going to get this too. And he's checking out. And I think that maybe he paid with a credit card, and somebody looked at his ID to check it. And they were oh, you're from Oregon. And he's yeah. And they mentioned that his last name was Hatfield, which was the name of a governor of Oregon previously. Like, my stepfather's from Oregon. So he just made this connection. He said Hatfield. And I looked up and it was fucking Tinker Hatfield there at my stepdad's record store. Those who don't know, Tinker Hatfield, the most legendary sneaker designer there is, the guy who made all the most important Air Jordans, Air Max shoes, et cetera, like in the middle of nowhere in Idaho. It turns out he has like a crazy summer home there in Sandpoint, Idaho. So once I looked up and saw that it was Tinker, you know, we talked for half an hour, and I had a random pair of Nike SB Dunk mids on my feet, which, like, a lot of people have signed Tinker Hatfield shoes. I have a pair, but it's the fucking SB Dunk mid, which has nothing to do with Tinker, but I had them on when I met him. Then it was just such a crazy moment. And I've seen him since at industry events. And, you know, Tinker Hatfield's obviously met a million sneaker nerds and doesn't care to remember who was who. But I always bring up this Sandpoint, Idaho thing. He's like, oh, yeah, the record store. So that's my only celebrity kind of sneaker retail sighting.
That's a good one, though. That's a good one. Not Tinker Hatfield, but it was in the fall of 2003. I was at college, but I basically, when I went away to college over Christmas break in the summer, I would go back to the Finish Line and work there. So at this point, it was Roosevelt Field. And there would be some celebrities that came in. Santana Moss from the Jets came in a lot. My friends would sell him sneakers. But as anyone who knows me knows, I was a 50 Cent G-Unit fanatic in my junior and senior year of college. And one day at Roosevelt Field, Lloyd Banks came in to buy the black and red 12s.
Oh my God.
And my friends were like hitting me up, texting me, Lloyd Banks is here, Lloyd Banks is here. I had such FOMO.
How far away were you? Was there any chance you would like hop in a car and speed over there?
No, I was at UConn. I was 3.5 hours away at UConn, but he came in. I was like, come on. And this is when I was playing Lloyd Banks, G-Unit and 50, like nonstop in the dorms at UConn. So I think he came in to buy, the black and red 12s, my friend said. And my friends got him to sign a receipt paper, extra receipt paper, like to Puma from Lloyd Banks, like with his signature. And they gave it to me when I got home. But I was so mad that I missed a chance to help Lloyd Banks, an idol of mine at the time.
Did he get an employee discount or did they break him off at all?
I don't know. But I got the Finish Line receipt paper with to Puma from Lloyd Banks somewhere.
That's a relic.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive and June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive and June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Guys, both of you have mentioned kind of the lawlessness around these places. Like, how much tomfoolery was happening in the stock room, or how wild did it get at these sneaker stores? I know they're corporate institutions, but were you guys kind of going crazy in there?
There's like stories that like you don't want to get like federally indicted. You know what I mean?
Oh, what? Federally indicted?
I mean, it got crazy. Early in my career in Bayshore, it got crazy. You know, we'll start with a fun one. There were people stealing from the store that were my friends. I had no idea that it was going on. And they would be like, hey, we had to part ways with so-and-so. I'd be like, why? They're like, oh, he stole like 20 pairs of sneakers. And I was like, impossible. And it was like the whole hustle was like taking the garbage out and stealing sneakers that way. And people volunteering to take the garbage out. And that's when like they would like either have someone waiting, I guess, for sneakers that they would bring out with the garbage. But I was never aware it was going on. So theft was pretty rampant in the early days. I remember Timberlands and Air Force Ones getting stolen.
Were you allowed to chase people down if somebody ran out of there?
Basically, there was this thing called heads up, right? And when you would bring out a sneaker and give it to someone, and then they're like, hey, can I also see this in a size 10 and a half? You would have to go back to the stockroom and say, heads up, yell heads up, right? And it would make people aware that, hey, that you have shoes on the floor and you're going back. So you would have to go heads up. And then if you like forgot to say it once, sometimes you would come out, the box would be there. You open the box and it's like dirty, dusty old sneakers. And clearly you got sneakers stolen from you. I never chased anyone. I have had friends, managers who like had tasers and things like that. Never tased anyone. Never really? Tased. Yes. Would go after people with like tasers. Like one of my good friends at the time, he was like going through a breakup and like had a really, really bad day. And someone stole Timberlands from him. And he like tried to chase the guy out of the mall, looked for him in the parking lot and like had a taser. And like mall security was like, bro, what are you doing right now? What are you doing?
It doesn't work like that.
Yeah. Like, come on, man. And like, we had to calm him down, but theft was rampant. And it was so rampant that like, and still to this day, it's like called shrink. It's like built in.
Yeah. Yeah. What is that? You said shrink. I don't know.
Yeah,
what that
shrink
is.
It's a term. Basically it's built into like, the bottom line.
Something they account for regardless because they know it's going to happen.
Or it's just stuff that goes missing. Shrink is like the overall percentage of products that aren't accountable during the audit that weren't sold.
Welty, were people stealing from your store?
I mean, had that sort of stuff happen. I remember I busted a guy that was like trying to steal a pair of sneakers with his daughter and it was weird.
Oh no. Can you tell that story?
Yeah, it was like the super like nice guy trying on a pair of like cross training shoes at Dick's, and then like, but at the time it was like a big department store, so you just give them the shoes and they walk up to the register, so you wouldn't think much about it. And I think he bought his daughter a pair of shoes, or he bought himself a pair of shoes or something like that, but he was buying two pairs. And then as I went and to put the other shoes away, I opened it up, and as Joe said, there was like a dirty pair of shoes in the box, and the guy's with his like 5-year-old daughter, and I had to be like, hey man, you forgot these ones too.
Ooh.
And like handed him back his shoes that he was trying. He's like, oh yeah, I forgot those.
Yeah, one thing one manager used to do if he caught you stealing, like, you know, people, and I'm wealthy, I'm sure that, like you said, yeah, people got caught stealing. One manager I had, a very close friend, it was his go-to move. He would know that he got a pair of sneakers stolen. If he found the person, which, you know, sometimes you walk through the mall with people and what would happen is, oh, yo, they just took this. And if they didn't get too far, you would kind of chase them down or walk very swiftly. What he would do if he got the shoes back, he would be like, listen, I'm going to call the cops if you don't give the shoes back. So they would obviously give the shoes back. And he was like, yeah, but I also want the ones that you wore to the mall. And he would make them walk barefoot. He would take their shoes back.
My God.
He would take their shoes back and the shoes that they tried to steal. And literally they would go barefoot wherever they were going next.
Walk of shame.
Yep.
I remember a crazy one. This isn't a stealing story. This is just a wild fucking story. There was this one guy that came in like late at night and he had like a pair of Tim's and he wanted to return them. And like there was like a weird like employee discount on them. And I'm like, hey man, do you work for Foot Locker? And he's like, nah. He's like, I'm like, well, I can't return this then because like, you know, someone like hooked you up with an employee discount and like, I can't bring it back. And I'm like, you need to go talk to whoever gave you this discount and, you know, they'll sort everything out for you. And he got like really fucking mad about it. And I'm like, dude, I can't do it, man. Sorry. And I'm like working in the store by myself at like, you know, 8 o'clock at night in Saugus, Massachusetts, which wasn't the best mall to work at the time. But
wasn't Peabody.
No, Peabody was like kind of an upscale mall. So I get a phone call, like we close at 9. I get a phone call like 45 minutes later and it's like, hey, what time do you guys close at? And I'm like in 10 minutes. And I was like, all right, I'll see you soon then. And I was like, I was like waiting for another customer to come and no one came. And I'm like, oh fuck. I was like, it's the dude that in my head, I'm like, it's the guy that like, I'll see you soon. And because he got really fucking angry in the store. I'm like walking out and like there's like a car like parked like with its lights flashed like right towards the like exit like waiting there, and I'm like, oh shit. And I had to like I think I went out the back exit and like up the fucking stairs.
Damn.
And like fucking ran into my car and drove off.
You didn't have the blinky on you?
No.
Did you ever know for sure if like that?
I never knew for sure but like I was just like super shook by like the situation, knowing that like
things can like escalate over sneakers like that. Cause you've definitely like seen people like get into fights. And like, I heard stories about like, you know, the, you know, they used to have like that, that metal thing that they would put out in the front of the store. It's like $2 for $89, like the sign. Yeah. People getting mad and like taking that and like swinging it like at employees and shit.
And you said you saw fights.
I didn't see them personally. I heard about them from the other managers. Like one of the managers like got pissed at a kid. He was an asshole. And he like gave me like fucking crazy stress. But he threw a customer into the shoe wall, which is like crazy to hear about. But
I do want to tell a quick story on the theft tip. Again, I don't have any sneaker retail stories, but I have done a few tours of duty in the world of retail. And I knew you guys wanted to hear more Magic the Gathering card shop stories. But so like I alluded to at the top of the show, when I was in college, I worked at a store in Eugene, Oregon called Addictive Behaviors, which was like a hobby shop. You know, they had all types of like nerdy board games and they would play a lot of Magic the Gathering there. You know, Saturdays for the Yu-Gi-Oh kids were smelling group there.
Did you have a goatee that smelled like Cheetos?
I had very little facial hair, but I spent a lot of my time in college there, and I worked there for maybe a summer or maybe a year or something like that. But I remember I was in there, and there was this guy kind of just like hanging out and pacing around and not making a lot of eye contact. It wasn't a regular person, you know. It was somebody I'd never seen before. And in the store, like where it is in Eugene, Oregon, it's right next to the bus station, which if you've ever been to Eugene, you know, all sorts of unsavory characters are right there. And he was just kind of like shuffling around, and he like picked something up and then started to turn around and walk slowly to the door. And I was like, hey, man, hey. And then I fucking bolted out of there and started chasing him. And somebody else who was in the store at the time, who I didn't know either, but they started chasing him with me, and we're fucking like chasing the guy across the street. And this is a very busy street. And I like fell in the middle of the hot pursuit of this fucking card thief and like ripped part of my Mishka pants open or something like that. But the other dude fucking like kept going, like track star bolting after this guy, and fucking pinned him down at one point, and the police got him and all this stuff. And the good Samaritan who helped out, I let him buy a bunch of Magic cards on my store credit and stuff like that. But I just want you guys to know I was out here chasing people down.
All right, and you missed your pants. I respect it. So Welty, you brought up the like metal signage in the front of the stores. Weird theft story I have is that I had one of my friends who was the manager at one time. Name was Rudy. If you know, you know. Not going to really say his last name. I think I said his last name already anyway, but
Yeah,
so sorry. But
not the hardest puzzle to put together.
Exactly. I remember 2003. It was like during that Nokia N-Gage era. Remember that?
Of course.
Okay, so
the gaming phone,
exactly,
right?
The gaming phone. And it was like he had the morning shift. It was like 10 to 8. And at that time, we were all like 5 years, 6 years in. And it was 2003, I remember Yao Ming signed to Reebok. And for signage, you guys know that the retail week to week or every few weeks, you had to change the displays. So at that point, you had a 7 foot, 6 inch cardboard cutout of Yao Ming in the front of the store, like giant, giant Yao Ming in front of the store. And my guy, Rudy, the manager at the time, must have been playing the N-Gage, and we kind of looked up, and I came out of the stock room or so. And then we looked up and I was like, yo, where did Yao Ming go? It was here like 10 minutes ago. Someone stole Yao Ming from the front of the store. Someone stole a 7'6" Reebok Yao Ming cardboard cutout and was walking through the mall. And
very casually with Yao Ming.
Casually, we missed
arm.
It. We missed it.
A and young like, Bach boy.
He was. Yao Ming was an OG Bach boy. Think about it. I would like to think someone in their man cave has a 7'6" Reebok Yao Ming cardboard cutout right now. And
that's quite the trophy.
That's wild.
It was crazy. I mean, listen, it was wild. Like there was a time, honestly, once one of our managers, he got transferred from upstate and he was like this really nice, soft-spoken guy. And we had like a tough crew at the time. Like I remember one day, like he went to take like a shoe from the shelf in the stockroom, and a gun fell down. Literally, a gun fell down. Yes. Like, thank God it didn't go off, but it was like someone brought a gun to like the store. And it was just, I think like people were kind of hooking up in the fitting rooms. There was times like,
these are the salacious details I need.
There were times where we kind of let it get away from us a little bit. Yeah. So retail, anyone who worked retail definitely has some stories. And I'm sure like we could go on for hours about it, but there was an underbelly of retail for sure where these things were happening.
Welty, you ever come across a gun in the stock room? Is it this crazy where you were?
No. I mean, people definitely fucked in the
changing rooms. Oh, well, I was saying hooking up, but okay, go ahead.
No, because like, I mean, I did a short stint at J. Crew, and like people would bring, like couples would bring like 20 outfits into the fitting room together. You know what I mean? And
then like not buy any of it. Couples in the changing room together?
Well, I mean, if it's a boyfriend and girlfriend, like they want to see how the clothes look. Two stories that really stick out to me. I remember Joe was talking about popping the Air Max bubble, and he had the Air Max 2009 in the social asset that we put out. But I remember a guy, this was during like the height of the recession, came in with the fakest pair of Air Max 2009s with a Foot Locker receipt too, like a fake Foot Locker receipt. I don't know where the fuck he got it from. He must have bought it off of eBay or something like that. It tried to return them, and I was like, the receipt, like it looked kind of right, but the paper wasn't right. You know what I mean? You could tell that something was up with it. And the bubble wasn't the same on the shoes. And I put it to like the next to the other pair, and the guy's like, wow, I don't know why these would be fake. And like, he was definitely like trying to like pull a jig, you know,
very bad acting.
Yeah. And he was like, oh man, I didn't know. I'm like, well, I mean, I can't do anything for you. So if you want to go to the person you bought it from and talk to him, he's like, yeah, sure, I'll be back. And like, you never see the guy again. But I remember working in downtown Boston, which that store was fucking wild. But there was like a crackhead sort of dude that came in, and he had a pair of fucking Tony Montana Air Force Ones.
Okay. Like, yes, just the Scarface joints.
No, not the Scarface ones that came out. Like a pair of white on white Air Force Ones that had like a almost like a reflective like Scarface scene on the swoosh. Oh,
like a lenticular treatment or something.
Yeah, and he came in, and like it's like this crackhead guy, and he's like, oh, I'm here to return these. And like in downtown, like they didn't give a fuck, so they're like, get the fuck out of our store, dude, beat it. And he's like, what are you talking about, I got these Air Force Ones for my girlfriend, like I want to return them. And he's like, they're like, no dude, get out of here. And I'm like, I just wanted to see the shoes. I remember them, like they kept the shoes from the guy, and they opened them up, and it had like Scarface on it, and it
they was, took the shoes from him.
Yeah.
They treated him like those guys at Joe's store. They make him walk home barefoot, man.
Welty, I'm always curious, how much did you fight back when someone stole something? Like, I have a story, and it was King's Plaza, and it was, you know, when you had the hat displays, it basically had every size, 7, 7 1/8, 7 1/4, 7 3/4. I knew, and to be honest, you kind of knew when people were there to steal stuff. You could just like, working retail all those years, you could kind of like,
you could feel it.
You could feel it and suss it out. And like, there was tricks that people were using that like you knew because they were using them over and over, different people. I was in King's Plaza once. Guys came in. One of them basically kind of like almost as behind the cash register as you could, but it was like this little opening that wasn't fully behind the cash register. Literally took a wad of Yankee fitteds, like every size. And I'm like, and just started walking out. I'm like, yo, what are you doing? What are you doing? And he was like, yes, can I help you? Walked right out, and I like gave me a death stare, and I was like, have a nice day, sir. Welty, how many? Wow. Honestly, dude, I was like, I'm just not fighting over Yankee fitteds. And the death stare ice grill that I got, I just said, hey, listen, sometimes the 7 1/8 fits a little different than the 7 1/4, but you have them both, so just figure out which one fits better and have a good day. Welty, did you ever fight back or what?
To be honest, I only had like one person that I remember like actually beat me on a pair of shoes, and it was like this guy and his girlfriend, and they were like super friendly, and I was the only person in the store, and like the store manager and the district manager were out back like counting shoes, and I didn't think anything of it. And he goes to his girl, he's like, hey babe, you want to try on a pair of shoes too, right? And I was like, all right, I'll go get it for you, because they were super friendly. And as I went back, they like just ran out with fucking the one pair of sneakers for the guy, and I had to like literally tell the district manager like right there that I got beat on the pair of shoes.
They ran like I always wonder, like, are people,
I didn't see him. No, like I was literally gone for like, dude, I was gone for like 30 seconds, and like they were nowhere in sight. But the funny part was, is that I remember, so I decided, I was like, fuck Foot Locker, I'm out, right? Mm-hmm. Or at least like, because I was like an assistant manager. To be honest, like Worst fucking job ever. I think during the height of being an assistant manager at Foot Locker, I was making like $28,000 a year, which was like the lowest.
Ouch.
Yes. The lowest of the lows, and working like fucking like 50 plus hours a week and having and having to lie to there was actually a class action lawsuit against Foot Locker, so I don't feel bad about saying it. They made employees lie about their hours to make the numbers. So at the time I was like, I'm going to go back to school. And my district manager at this time, this guy, Jim Clark, who I think is probably massively stupid at this point, even for what he said to me. But I was like, hey, I'm going to go back to school. And he's like, that's the fucking stupidest thing you could ever do in your life. And I was like, really? He's like, do you see so-and-so? He's like, what are you going to do? I'm going to be a journalist. He's like, oh, do you see so-and-so? He's a journalist and he fucking hates his life. You're going to smoke cigarettes and be stressed and like never be successful.
You still are stressed, although you have found some success. So he was wrong.
And different ways to cope with it. He goes to the prosciutto.
Exactly. So you got the last laugh. You tell that manager.
What's his name? Listen.
Yeah. Jim Clark. Go fuck yourself.
Damn, boy. Okay.
But no, I mean, there's certain people that like pass you in those worlds where like, you know,
for sure. You know, it's weird that some of that stuff sticks out to me too. Like people telling me, you know, I interned for Complex for 2 years and someone pretty close to me was like, you get to intern forever. Hey.
Yeah.
You hear us now weekly, don't you?
The audio quality isn't what it could be, but you hear us.
I know. Listen, it's not that clear, but you still hear us. All right. The program's shoddy, but you hear us, right?
We're in your ears.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, you do remember those kind of, I think everyone uses that as inspiration, even
that teacher who told you you're never going to amount to nothing, basically.
Exactly. Like Miss Guthrie.
Fucker.
Yeah.
Drop it.
That's all I have to say. Guys, I'm so glad we got to delve into this. Like, I hear pieces and bits of these stories from you, and they're here and there in podcast episodes, but really kind of hearing firsthand what that shit was like, you know, those are the stories that you never forget. And like these weird connections to certain models, you know, a lot of our memories have to do with blogs or lining up for shoes, but you guys were actually out there selling them. I mean, that sounds incredibly real. I want to tell one more story just as it relates to coronavirus and all that. And it does connect back to sneakers, as it always does. You guys ever fight with people over sneakers?
How? Like what?
Have you ever gotten to like an argument over sneakers?
I argue with this guy, Welty, every day. What do you mean?
I had like a family rift over sneakers. This is a true story.
Oh, no, not like that.
I think I've mentioned before that parts of my collection are in different parts of the country. I have a bunch of shoes stored in Oregon that have been looked after by my brother for the last 8 years or so. And I never really check on them too frequently. I go there once a year, maybe everything looks good, whatever. But I was talking to him on FaceTime over Christmas and I saw him wearing a pair of black cement threes, and he's not a sneaker guy at all. And I was just like, those are the pair with the Jumpman on them, like not the newer joints. Like, you definitely don't have access, you know? And so I started pressing him on it over FaceTime and we started kind of like going back and forth, and you know, he hangs up on me eventually. And then a bunch of furious texts back and forth between each other, you know, sibling stuff. And he kind of freaked out on me, and I learned in that moment that my shoes, my precious stash, was being dipped into, and we kind of weren't speaking for months because of it. But then this coronavirus thing happened, and I feel like because of it, everybody is like reaching out to the people they care about, which I'm so happy to see, and people reconnecting and things like that. And he finally sent me this apologetic text being like, I'm sorry, I love you, and we're talking again, and this thing that happened over sneakers is finally like patched up. So I just wanted to get that out there in terms of where we're at right now with this self-isolation, but trying to stay connected, you know?
You guys made up because you realize that there's more important things than black cement threes.
I don't know if I'll go so far as to say that, because black cement threes are
very important. Very important, but
you know, we're good. And it's my other brother's birthday today, so shout out to him too. You know, it's a family affair.
But all seriousness, like a lot of stuff going on. Now it is the time to kind of the trivial stuff to put aside and make amends with some riffs, whether it's over sneakers or something else, for sure.
Sneakers are not trivial, though.
That's true, but less important than family.
Joe, the last quick question I want to ask you before we go out, you don't need to give any specifics, but just yes or no. Did you ever get a girl's number while working in the store?
Yes. My first girlfriend, we got to say this, I have to. My first girlfriend worked at Baskin Robbins at the kiosk two doors down from the finish line. And
a Long Island love story.
My first love, honestly. I'm not going to front. I'm giving the people what they want. I'm being transparent. My first love, for sure. And she worked at Baskin Robbins. She used to come in the store, didn't give a shit about sneakers. And ended up, I was dating her for like 2 years, and there was like someone who came into the store, and we like got into like this online beef over her and got into a fight in the store, and my nose was broke while customers were in the store, blood gushing all over.
You saved that one for the end? How did you, you weren't going to tell us that story?
Sorry. You know what? That's why this guy's good at, he asks questions that you unexpect, but yes. So, and they were like, bring all your friends to, when do you work next? And I was like, I work this day at this time, bring all your friends. None of my friends could get off. I brought guys who I knew from Brentwood, very tough guys. Brentwood is a tough area in
the Sharks or Jets?
Done. These were tough guys, bro. These were tough guys. Anyway, they never showed up. And my girlfriend at the time was like, oh, you guys were talking all this shit. You didn't show up. They showed up and we got into a fight in the store with customers. I got like sucker punched from the side. My nose was broke, blood all over the store. But yes, to your point, not only did I get a number while working at Finish Line, I definitely met my first like real love. And
you got into an AOL Instant Messenger beef.
Yes, exactly.
Here's the thing. We need like a transparent emotional story from Welty. Now that we're pouring our guts out, Welty, I need something sneaker related. I don't know if it's in the store or what, but we're all here being very emotional with each other in these
tough
times.
We're all
I need
we got.
Something from you.
Oh my God.
Look at that fourth quarter story, the last shot I hit, right?
Welty, give me something.
Okay, here's a story. I was working at the store at Saugus. So there was this girl that I had met on Nike Talk, right?
Oh, he met her on Nike Talk. Go ahead, go. Sneaker Cutie 4 on Nike Talk?
No, but I met this girl on Nike Talk. And we had it like started dating. She lived in Massachusetts. And I was working there. And we had the 60-plus Jordan 1 pack, the black toe. Was it black? Was it bread Jordan 1s, like the Celtic Jordan 1s? Remember those that came in the pack together?
Right, yes. Right. White, black, and green, right?
And we had like a fucking 100 pairs of them and couldn't sell the shoes. And she had said that like, oh, her black and red 1s, like someone had like stolen them or something like that, or they got fucked up. And she wanted to get a pair and like came down like before we worked and like I opened the gate and like, you know, we talked and I like gave her, like, I didn't give her the shoes. I sold her the shoes, but like on my employee discount, but then like ended up like dating and she was like going away to school at the time and was like, oh, I'm going away to school. But like in like Philadelphia or something, it didn't matter. But she's like, oh, you should like probably try to get out of this because you hate it so much. And I was like, you're right. I should probably do it. And that's when I just applied to Rutgers and that's the only school that I applied to. And I got in and that's when I left. But that was the whole.
She changed your life.
Impetus to get out of it. I ended up working at Foot Locker for another like 3 years while I was at Complex.
Fuck Jim Clark.
As an intern, I used to, when I was working there, I was a freelance style writer intern, and I used to have to do the Sunday blog posts, and like I used to run into like the Barnes and Noble and like try to like bang out like a quick like news post on the
Steal
Wi-Fi.
Steal the internet. Something you're still doing in 2020, stealing internet from other people to do your Complex work.
Yeah, but that was, I guess, a moment that kind of changed my life for the better. So,
do you remember her screen name?
Oh, yes, I do. I do remember.
Okay. I'm not, we're not going to say it. But.
Well, you know, when you get that, when you get that footwear news award, you could thank her.
Lifetime achievement award.
All right, I think we should wrap up. Listen, I think it was a kind of like a last second shot. We both
literally shot our shot.
Exactly.
Beautiful.
We hope everyone enjoyed it. And guys, stay safe. We will be here every Friday morning wherever you guys consume podcasts. Thank you so much for joining the Complex Sneakers podcast. We will see you guys next week. Stay safe. Our producer is Shiva Bayet. Sound engineering done by Kyle Garvey. Special thanks to Dave Matthews and Jennifer Stewart. The Complex Sneakers podcast is part of the Complex Podcast Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free
or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.